gracious me.
I'm in trouble.
I'd walk a million miles for one of your goals, oh Scotland.
Oh, enough of that. You're out. You're out
enough
of the
football.
I saw that our dear friend Bryn was up in Scotland. Did you see this?
No.
And he obviously had some kind of train journey from England to Scotland. And he had, in his Strava post, he'd referenced all of the really dodgy songs that had been sung, that we'd heard singing on the train. And I didn't recognise any of them. Is Harry Kane a window pane? Is that a big Scottish song that I'm unaware of?
Oh, it's a massive hit. It's been a massive hit in Scotland for the past however many years Harry's been on the scene. No, I've never heard that one, actually.
Your brother, he just loves the classic, doesn't he, really? You're having a party.
Yeah. I awoke in the night with a fever, and the sky was a darkest blue. That one, I mean, the 1982 song.
That's the one, my friend. Stick it in the closet for another 23 years.
I'll be nearly 70 by the time we qualify again.
Yeah, man. Just think how many Western States tickets you'll have by the time Scotland get in another tournament.
Surely I'll have made it into Western States by then, right? I'd have doubling every year for 23 years. I think I'd have more tickets than there are grains of rice in the known universe.
And it still won't get you in.
It still won't get in. Oh, I did get into Spartathlon, though. Oh.
Woo! Now we're talking.
I got the classic email, which our dear friends at Spartathlon have. They've juiced it up a little bit. So it used to just be one line that said, "Now you may enter." And it was a link to a form. But this time it had a few more words and a little bit more of a form. And can't wait. I think I'm going to be about number 340, something like that.
Sparta, 340. Sparta. The dream is back on.
Oh, the nightmare. Mate. The nightmare is here again.
It's funny, actually. I was on Facebook and someone was talking about us, Daz. They were referring to us fondly as the two Spartathletes. For a moment, I completely forgot that we were able once to complete a Spartathlon. Seems a very long time ago.
It does seem a long, long time ago, doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a struggle down the River Lee on Saturday, actually. 50 kilometres. felt like a long way.
The old fast and flat Lee Valley wipes you out.
Surprisingly brutal in places, I think. Our runners did well, didn't they? How many finishes did we have?
Mate, nearly like 130 finishes, which was superb, and we nearly tried to nobble a few of them, didn't we, Daz? We almost had our own little major drama.
I thought you were talking about the angry geese. Did you see that massive goose family that had like 15 babies?
We need to get more signs for next year, Daz.
Angry geese sign.
Portion, angry geese. Now I'm talking about the flooded underpass, of course.
Oh, the tough guy part of the course, yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shocker, wasn't it, mate?
It was a shocker. I thought about sort of midnight on the Friday night, I thought, oh my God, we're going to have to cancel this race again, twice due to COVID and once due to a flash rainstorm that flooded the underpass under the A road. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, just couldn't believe it when that happened on Friday night. But the runners all took it in the eventual spirit, didn't they? In the spirit of ultra, got on with it. Were you just wearing your pants when you were helping them through, or were you a bit more decent than that?
That was a sight just for you, my friend. Yes, we had a few more clothes on the Saturday, but yeah, found myself in the middle of the swamp, ushering people through. And as you said, they were pretty gutsy for the most part, and quite a few smiles on the faces. Yeah, totally rocked it. So yeah, very proud.
Very good. Who have we got this week?
Mate, we've got a rare treat this week, Daz. As you know, because you've been mocking me honestly over the past few months about doing some very dodgy FKTs. We've actually got the king of FKTs on the podcast.
That's you. That's you, isn't it? You're the king of FTT, right?
I pretend. I am the pretender. No, there's a guy, a wonderful guy called Jason Hardrath, who is based in the States, up in Washington. And
yeah. He's got some real trails there then, yeah.
Yeah, some serious stuff. So yeah, he's been kind of quietly, or not so quietly, smashing FKTs week in, week out. And he's had this hashtag journey to 100 FKTs brewing for about 4 or 5 months now. So yeah, he's sat proudly on 99 FKTs on the leaderboard. And yeah, to give him his credit, he has been planning for a while something very unique for his 100th FKT. He's actually doing this thing Daz called the 100 Washington Bulgers, which, yeah, you know, for our UK listeners, if you think of something like the Bob Graham, where we're doing kind of 42 peaks in 24 hours, this, I mean, one of those Washington Bulgers is huge. It's much more akin to stuff that you'd find out in the Alps. And the current FKT for this is 410 days. And he's hoping to bring the record down to 50 days. So he's he's about day 10 at the moment, and he's making great progress. But I mean, I heartily recommend people follow Jason on, especially on Instagram, at Jason Hardrath. I mean, it's just seriously insane, buddy. He's got some of these peaks are in sort of protected areas where there's current bushfires.
Oh wow.
there's other ones where there are kind of glaciers, which are obviously in there, depending on weather conditions, they could be a little bit kind of suspect. And the ones that I really love, Daz, is that there are 6 of these peaks, which if you were taking the kind of the more easier route, you would actually go from the US into Canada and go up the Canadian side. And because of the pandemic, Jason can't do it. So he actually has to scale the 6 far tougher routes inside. It's just completely insane when you see some of his daily videos. I mean, one of the peaks he's got to do, he describes in the podcast, it's like doing a 4-day Barclay marathon, terrain-wise, just to bag one of the peaks. I mean,
right, he's got to hike into the peak, has he?
Exactly, yeah.
Sure, that sounds, wow, what a challenge. Sounds amazing.
What a challenge, mate. So yeah, he's a great guy, and yeah, he's a wonderful guest on the podcast.
Fantastic. We should put him on, shouldn't we?
Let's get him on, buddy.
Jason, can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Boom!
Boom!
Boom boy!
What's up, man?
He's got the biggest beard. I think you have.
By a little bit, maybe.
Been on a constant growth, isn't it? Master's own beard.
It's been on its way for a while. I just decided I wasn't shaving, and then it just kept getting bigger.
How are you doing, my brother?
It's the last day of school, checkout day. So yeah, can't complain. Little nervous because it's like, it's real. Like, it's going to start.
Dude, mate, we need to tee up. We need to share with the world a little bit of information here, my friend. What is it you're about to do, Jason?
I am about to attempt to be the first person to climb the historic Washington Bulgers list in the state of Washington here in the U.S.
Yeah.
In a single climbing season. Nobody's pulled it off yet. So I'm going to attempt to climb 100 of the tallest peaks in 50 days. That's the hope.
50 days. Boom, mate. We need to unpack some of this information here. Yeah. We're gonna come on to the FKT story in a bit, but starting with the Bulgers. So knowing that most of the audience here, Jason, are kind of familiar with UK roots, yeah? So you're familiar with, have you heard of the Bob Graham round and the other round?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So typically these are pretty tiny in comparison. We're talking like a 24-hour challenge to do like 42 peaks. So how vast are we talking about for something that's a 50-day challenge? What's the distance we're talking about, Jason?
So, I mean, I guess there's a few different ways to look at this. A single day out to get just six of the peaks, let's say. Well, no, like three of the peaks. I have an example. One of my early days in this adventure is going to be 42 miles to get four peaks.
Yeah.
And close to 16,000 feet of elevation gain and loss. And that's like one of the early days on this trip. And that's just one day.
Yeah.
Then like an easy day. One of my easiest days of the whole trip is going to be about 9 miles with about 8,000 feet of elevation gain and loss. That's like a recovery day.
Yeah.
And then there's a day where I'm going to do like 34 miles plus close to 30K of vert. So it's like just linking these days where it's like do a thing all day. Climbing, and again, these are like pretty technical peaks, a lot of them, where you're going into fifth class terrain or you're on glaciated, like crevassed glaciers where you've got to like not step and break through. So it's like route finding, it's mixed skills, it's knowing what kind of terrain you're getting into, it's deep backcountry bushwhacking. There's, for one example, just to get into the Chilliwacks, I'm gonna have about 14 miles of trail running, but then another almost 10 miles of bushwhacking just through. I don't know if people on here have seen photos of the bushwhacking in the state of Washington, but it's a jungle there. Like it's intense. And, you know, so it's not like, oh, I'm going to go like on this easy open country cruiser jog through backcountry. It's like, okay, like duck and branch and move the branches out of your way. And oh, all right, 10 miles of that. And that's just to get to the first peak, you know, then you have to do the whole big link up in the alpine terrain with, you know, fifth class rock climbing and all that. And then you get to come back out that same way to get back to civilization. So it's a bunch of these different link ups where it's not just driving to a trailhead and being like, okay, I'm going to run up the trail to the top. In fact, only three of the mountains have trails that go to the top out of the 100. So it's just going to be this wild adventure. Some of them I'll be out in the backcountry for 5 days without like restock or resupply to like be able to stay out and beg all the peaks in a given zone because there's no road that goes there. There's no access. It's deep wilderness. So that's where this, you know, 50 days to tag, you know, 100 peaks comes from is because it's not, you're not just driving. Oh, well, time to drive to the next mountain. it's pretty real stuff, and it's crazy, it's scary, it's overwhelming. Like anytime I let myself like drift to thinking about the whole project, I'm like, what? And then I'm like, no, just go out and play for a day. That's all you're doing. You're just going out and playing for a day.
Jason, we need to go back to the beginning. Yeah, so first of all, just to let kind of our listeners know that we've been having a lot of friendly banter, haven't we, for a good few months now. And one of the key elements is this beautiful hashtag, which is called Journey to 100 FKTs.
True.
First of all, let's go seriously deep in the beginning. So for someone that doesn't even know what an FKT is, Jason, what's an FKT?
Well, at this point, I feel like they should almost ask you. FKT stands for fastest known time. Yeah. It is a route that you follow based on GPS data and either historic route descriptions, whether it's trail or mountain. And you use a GPS device or live tracker and photos from that geostamp, like a cell phone, where that geostamps your location and time.
Yeah.
And you submit that data to contest the route, to compete with prior times. And you attempt to be the person who's done it the fastest that we know of, thus the name fastest known time.
Yeah.
They're a wild adventure because you can do them in places that, you know, a race director could never get permits or insurance to host a race. So it allows us wild people to get out and like go crazy in the backcountry.
Yeah. So, I mean, genuinely, quite a lot of our listeners will have heard of fastest known times, buddy. And I guess, you know, you've got a website, thefastestknowntime.com. And, you know, for anybody that's kind of been on there, especially in the last year, especially in lockdown and the pandemic, I mean, the whole scene's exploded, hasn't it? But actually, I'm kind of firstly curious to know, Jason, I mean, for someone that's at 99 FKTs, I mean, clearly you've been doing this for some time. And where did it first start for you, Jason? Like, where did you first hear about the FKT, and what was number one for you, buddy?
So I kind of came into the FKT world because I was already basically doing stuff like it, just going out. Like, I'd had a big car accident in 2015 that crippled me up pretty bad. And so my running, I hadn't been able to run. So I got into hiking up and down hills. And I got in, and then hills led to mountains, and then mountains led to more technical mountains. And then it's like, well, now I need to rock climb so I can climb these technical mountains in the Alpine. And so, like, I'm doing all this to learn these new skills and to build new strength while I can't really run yet because of my knee. And then slowly over time, the running came back. So it's like, well, now I've got these cool skills. Let's just go bag a whole row of peaks in a day. You know, most people would like camp out for 2 days or whatever. Let's just go bag them all in a day and like get home and have a warm meal, have a cold beer, and, you know, call it a day. And so was already out kind of doing these big pushes and coming up with some creative lines. And then discovered that FKTs existed. I'm like, this is what I'm doing. Like, I'm already doing this. This is what I'm looking for in the world. This is what I love doing. And it just gave me a forum where it's like, okay, I can take something I'm doing and have it like impact and reach other people. Like, maybe it gives them inspiration for a project they have, or maybe they want to come try my route. So I fell in love with it really quick and knew it was something I was going to be doing a lot of. And so actually my first FKT where I knew I was chasing an FKT was Sea to Summit on Mauna Kea in Hawaii, which is basically running from the ocean all the way up to the summit of this 13,000 plus foot mountain. Wow. It's like a 44 mile day. It's pretty epic. A lot of road running, but still like a super cool experience to like, okay, I ran from the ocean to over 13,000 feet. So super cool first experience. I totally dirt bagged it there in Hawaii too. I mean, I showed up, I had no hotels, nothing. Like, I didn't have any money. So I'm like sleeping on the beach. And one night I slept on the roof of a warehouse that I like saw a way I could climb up to the top, and just like crashed out and slept on this roof. Just like total dirt bag, like didn't pay for a single night of lodging, hitchhiked my way to the start and back to the airport. You know, just a wild, wild weekend adventure.
I love that, mate. Have you heard of the Hertz 100, Jason?
I have, of course.
Is that in the same terrain or somewhere completely different?
Well, I would say compared to this FKT, it's completely different. Because like I said, you do a lot of road running on this route, and the Hert is anything except road running. It's called the Hert for a reason.
Is the Hurt something you, I mean, because obviously the things that we're talking about, the FKTs and stuff, I mean, and the injury that you had, do you feel like you sort of getting back injury wise to, would you take on a challenge like the Hurt 100, or is that something that
absolutely. I would totally go do races again. I think one of my draws to the FKTs is instead of paying like $300 to $500 to $700 for an entry fee, I can, you know, do my own logistics. And then if, you know, donate to, you know, land conservancy or trail maintenance, and like have my money go to something like to support the land I want to play on. And I kind of like that. I like that it allows me to be like, okay, sure, I can give some money to these causes that are doing good things. Not that races don't do good things. Like, a lot of race directors do really good things with the money they make. And I don't want to like anyone to feel like I'm slamming them, like, oh, they're just selfish. No, not what I'm saying.
Not all of them.
But I don't know. I like doing my own logistics. I like having that on my shoulders, but I would totally do a race again. You know, I have a couple of brands where they have some like free race entries to places, and I'm like, well, you know, maybe like if I if I don't have to go pay, like maybe it's worth getting back in the racing scene. But I've just been so into creating routes and repeating routes in the FKT world for these last 3 years that I just haven't even thought about it.
Amazing.
But yeah, no, the Hurt 100 though, that is one that I would be more drawn to. Just because it is a brutal style of race versus like, oh, who's the fastest?
So in terms of like our joint FKT sort of journey, so like yourself, Jason, clearly there was a time, wasn't there, when we'd both done sort of 10, 15, 20 FKTs, probably in our own little space, yeah? When you've just done a few, you know, you don't tend to look too much about what else is going on, but clearly there's a thing, isn't there, in the kind of the FKT the leaderboard that's there, when you can't help but sort of peering over and you go, okay, there's a bunch of people on 25 and 30 and wow, man, if I get to like above 30, I'm going to be like, whoa, you know, sort of up there. And there was a guy, wasn't there, Ben, that you must have seen, who's probably, you know, one of the originals. Did you know much about Ben, or did you kind of, in the early days, did you get hold of him and find out a bit more about his kind of journey?
He is a hard man to get a hold of, and he's not much of a talker, really.
Yeah.
For all he's accomplished, I think he's like had conversations all of maybe once or twice with people.
Yeah.
You know, he's just kind of got that New England mentality, like show up, get it done, go home. And like he's a legend. I honestly, you look at what he's done on the competitive routes that he did them on, and yeah, a lot of respect for what that guy did. And he was doing, you know, multiples in a year back when nobody was doing that, right? Like he was just chasing these hard to get FKTs,
yeah.
Back before, and like doing them, like a lot of them in a year before anybody was doing it. So yeah, I think when I started chasing, he was somewhere in the mid or upper 50s. I think he was somewhere in the upper 50s. And yeah, it was like, wow, look at this guy with like this many, and they're amazing routes, difficult routes, like, you know, some of them even you'd say legendary East Coast routes. It was a huge inspiration. And then like kind of getting close, and he like not would be knocking out more as like I would start to close in. Kind of this like brutal chase to finally track him down. We've had one or two conversations just like via email, because I just wanted to reach out and like connect with him and have a conversation and let him know that, you know, he was an inspiration. He was out there on his own, just in a league of his own. Like the leaderboard looks very different than it did back in 2018. It used to be that there was basically the next closest person, I think, had like 30. Low 30s or maybe even just high 20s. And then it was him out there in the 50s, like just this massive separation. It was a very different leaderboard to look at that time than what it is now, where you kind of like look down and go, yeah, I mean, it's fun to have this conversation, because, you know, I've got my 99 and you have 79. So it's like, this is the conversation with more FKTs than any conversation in history. as of now anyways.
I mean, buddy, there's been a lot of, between ours and our sort of our circle, there's been a lot of fun conversation, isn't there? I mean, there's some interesting things here, isn't there, in terms of the current FKT scene and like where it might go in the future. I mean, you know, what you're about to embark on, Jason, is truly extraordinary. And I'm a huge fan of yours and of this concept of, We joke, don't we, that, you know, potentially I could go off and do 21 pretty simple, small FKTs, which I'm not going to do. But you've chosen to do this beautifully epic thing. Whatever makes you decide, like, whether you do, you know, multi-days, or there's some FKTs that like 50 minutes, just that it is a beautiful mix of things and you like that mix, or...
So there's multiple motivations. I mean, whenever we look at ourselves, we realize that we have different instincts and different drives that motivate us.
Yeah.
And some of my routes, I do them because it's like, this is a good route. It's not necessarily what speaks to me, but it's a good route that other people will appreciate. So I've done a few like pure trail routes.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful trails, but to those ones aren't what speak to me, because I know there's thousands and thousands and thousands of human beings who can run any trail faster than me.
Yeah.
And so like that one to me, it's like, I'm doing that for others. Like, okay, this is a route that should be here. I'm going to do the research to make sure I find prior fast times because this trail's worth like honoring those people. Right. One of the frustrations I've had with some people who have been newer to the scene and don't understand, like, you know, they'll just like pick a route in an area that people have run on, like really good runners have trained on and run on, and then be like, hey, I've got the FKT. It's like, no, you don't. Like not even close. Even just looking at Strava data, I can show you, you don't have the FKT. And that's not to be mean to them, but it's like, to me, that's disrespectful to the people that came before, right? It's not paying honor to the people who like first forged the way. And so to me, it's like really important to do that deep research. And so when I find a route that, even if it's not like, say it's like one of these trails where it's like, yeah, this, I'm not going to have the fast, maybe I won't even get the fast time. I'll do the research. It's like, oh, I'm not fast enough to beat that. But at least now it's out there with like authentic honor paid to the people and the history. And now like maybe some crusher athlete will see it and go, that speaks to me. And I'm going to try to go beat that big name from history. Yeah. So to me, it's like, there's this approach with routes where it's like, okay, pay honor to those that came before, be creative, do things that inspire people other than you. But then on the other side, so that's in one box. On the other side, I have things where it's like, no, this is me pushing me. This one's like either an experiment, like the one I'm about to do with 100 Peaks. Like it's like a final examination of all of the skills I've built up in mountaineering, rock climbing, running, ultra endurance, self-care, logistics, route planning, orienteering. Like it's a final exam where it's like, hey, high stakes, don't mess it up. So like I'll choose things where it's like, this is me forging a better version of myself. And I mean, I think that's kind of part of any big thing we do. It's like, we're doing the big thing to like run the experiment of, can I do it? But at the same time, we're going, well, is this something I'm capable of? We're trying to like, see if it's something we can add to ourselves. And I think that's really important to recognize in your motivations as well. Like, okay, what am I trying to learn? What am I growing from here? And then some of them, it's just like stuff that's been my style where you look, you know, I have routes that are 4 days long and I have routes that are 38 minutes long. And you know, like for example, one of those 38 minute routes it's 2 miles, but it is the most wild canyon 2-miler you will ever experience. You're like slithering down chimneys and you're like bouncing off the walls and like, you know, going through a chimney with your hands out. Like you're just like all out trying to like move through these sequences that get you safely through this like slot canyon. And like, that was just pure fun to like project that and memorize the moves and then be like, okay, here we go. Training wheels are off, all out. And just like, it was like a dance with the canyon. And I love experiences like that. And a lot of my run plus solos or infinity loops that I've done, there's been something deeply drawing about the experience and pushing myself against a given challenge of nature that has just been a fabulously growing experience as an athlete. I wasn't even a canyoneer before I started FKTs. Like all of the skills of canyoneering and how to learn information about canyoneering all came as a product of like finding that next iteration of like, what kind of routes do I want to add? What can be done here in Utah? I was in Utah. It's like, what can be done that should be an FKT that's not an FKT? What can I learn to see that nobody's seen yet? And that's been a super cool process. So yeah, I guess that's the long kind of answer to your question.
I love it, buddy. I love it. Obviously, you know, it's quite a big impact on life, isn't it? Sort of the life balance FKTs. I mean, people often like they'll just see the actual run you've done, but especially for you, Jason, there will be like, you know, the effort, the planning to get to the location, be in that location. I mean, I know a bit more about you. You know, you've, you know, in terms of like, you know, where you've been based and how you get from A to B. I mean, you and your van in van life. How's the van at the moment, buddy?
So blew that van up over spring break down in Bishop, California, blew the heads out. And so was homeless for the month of April. searching for a new van solution, and managed to find myself an old Sprinter van, an old 2004 T1N, the really reliable ones. And have that, like, it's super raw. It's like a raw cargo van inside with a bed platform right now, but it's going to get the job done and be reliable for this 100 peaks effort. And it has enough space. So yeah, super, super stoked with the new van situation. I'll get a better build in it later on. But right now it was like, no, just need something livable to go do this major mission. Yeah. Keep the main thing, the main thing. I can be comfortable later.
And what was the crew situation? Is Ashley with you for the whole event?
She will be with me for a good chunk of it. She has a couple of trips she's guiding on mountains, so she'll have to leave for a while, and I'll be kind of self-supported, or maybe some other people have mentioned they might be able to join in and like be at base camp or something, and help out. But we'll see. You know, the thing is, people's schedules change, so it's like I can't lean in too heavily that I'm going to have any specific person on any specific day. I just kind of have to be ready to adapt or change, and hope that on the, you know, these peaks that are, you know, the consequences are mortal, be able to have a climbing partner to back me up. So if I fall in a crevasse, like they can pull me out. Yeah. But yeah, it's a lot to coordinate. It's a ton to coordinate with this one, between climbing partners and what roads are open and closed and what routes are open and closed due to fire closures and who lives in what town and wants to climb which peaks with me and what days they have off. And, you know, plus just like memorizing 100 different routes up mountains so that you don't go the wrong way when you're up there. Like, oh, is it the right couloir or the left couloir? Is it the right chute or the left chute? Do I climb the face or do I get in the gully? It's a lot. There's a lot of data there. And so it's been crazy to like go over this and sort of comb through people's stories and people's trip reports and process. The current record holder, Eric Gilbertson, has been a huge help. Another guy who's climbed a lot of them and is kind of known for being pretty bold, which is something I look for, because I tend to be pretty bold with the stuff I do. Matt Limke, he's been huge. Another guy who's almost done with all 100, just like ticking it off as like a lifetime list, which is, I guess I should say, that's another reason I'm drawn to this, is it's kind of mostly been perceived as this iconic historic thing to do that takes years and years to work your way through. Yeah. And so kind of one of my hopes is that my effort gives it the nudge that, oh wait, this is something that can be done in like a 50-day period, you know, give or take. Like I might get shut down by weather. The Canadian border's closed right now. And literally there's a set of 6 of these peaks that are so hard to access. It is easier to cross into Canada and then come back into the US on trail to access them than to access them from anywhere in the US. It's just wild. And so right now the Canadian border is closed, so it's like I don't have that standard option. Yeah. So just like all these different things that it's like for an FKT, I'm now paying attention to Canadian politics. I'm becoming a more internationally versed person because I want to climb some mountains.
What's the current known best, putting it all together?
410 days. So right now it's like that's too big of an amount of time for an athlete to be like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
But if I can knock it down somewhere in the ballpark of 50 days, like suddenly other athletes might be like, okay, like this is something I can dedicate. Like this is the project I want to do. So it'll be cool if my effort sort of opens the door for even more breakthroughs in the style and fashion and speed in which these peaks can be climbed.
Yeah. Jason, yeah. If you come across some issues, you know, some logistical issues or whatever, and I mean, do you have 70 days or 80 days, you know, available to see the job done? I mean, does it start to get precarious if you're at 40 days and it's drifting? What will you do, buddy?
So, I mean, obviously mountains that are tall and technical, like a lot of these peaks are, the mountain has the last call, right? You don't get to decide when you go up the mountain. The mountain decides when you go up the mountain. So I'm balancing a lot of things. Like I'm going to start on the eastern peaks because they can light on fire. And if there's a fire closure, it's like my whole effort's done. because they might leave it closed for an entire year. You never know with fire closures. And so I'm wiping out all of the high risk fire peaks first, which puts me at risk on the other end, where now I'm going to have to take on glaciated terrain with crevasses in a much less ideal time of year, where snow bridges are collapsing and maybe you can't yet fully see where all the crevasses are, but like you also can't trust the snow bridges that go over them because they could collapse any given day. So it's gonna put me in some risky terrain that I'm gonna do my best to mitigate and avoid by going through even slower moving terrain. But it's like this balance. It's like I got to be paying attention to, you know, what are the routes doing on Mount Rainier? Like, are they, you know, are the guides still taking people to the top, or are they about to shut it down while I'm on the other side trying to wipe out these peaks where it's like I can't let this go too long because a fire could break out over here because it's drier. So it is like this huge challenge of like balancing risk on a variety of levels.
Man, it's just seriously insane, buddy. I can't quite wrap my head around it. I was following this thread on social media at the weekend, Jason, where on a much smaller scale, buddy, that, you know, this is kind of peak season in the UK to be doing some of the, you know, the classic rounds. So we have the Bob Graham round and we have the Paddy Buckley and the Charlie Ramsey rounds, are three of the most common ones, buddy. And in this thread, somebody was kind of analyzing some of the attempts and they were querying whether the person had actually, you know, reached the summits. Do you know what I mean? And so yep. I don't know how it works for you, Jason, maybe you can share, but obviously in the UK, we have like these cairns, like or trig points. So it can be either just a series of rocks that have been there a long time, or maybe a monument that's been built. And, you know, to fulfill the round, you know, you should be stood next to it, touching it. When someone's analyzing whether you've done the FKT or not, they're just looking at kind of GPS data, which can be off for all kinds of reasons. Yeah. So, I mean, that have you got that sort of thing to consider as well? Is there some form of like check to say you've done these things? Or
so I've actually been putting a ton of thought into how I'm going to keep my summit routine efficient.
Yeah.
Because each summit will have a summit register that I can sign.
Right.
Then also I'm going to be carrying like my cell phone that can take, you know, a geo stamp photo. So take a photo next to that thing. I'll also have a GoPro with me that I'll try to record the top of every summit. Yeah. So I'll have a few duplications plus the GPS data so that, cause I don't want anyone to be able to say like, oh, like he didn't actually get on the technical summit. Cause there's some of them, there are genuinely some of these mountains that the last 40 feet is the hardest 40 feet. Like you're going from fairly easy moving terrain to like full-blown rock climbing to get to the final summit block. And I don't want anyone to be able to be like, well, he didn't go to the true summit on the Dorado Needle. He didn't make the 5'8" rock climbing moves. So his whole effort doesn't count. It's like, no, I'm going to make sure. Cause I don't know, to me, I do it cause I love it. And I do it cause I want the challenge for myself. Like there's not secondary gain that is my primary motivation. Yeah. To me, it's about answering the question, am I capable? Am I competent enough to complete this? And so to me, it's like, if I ran into one of these mountains that I just absolutely could not climb, it'd be like, okay, guys, effort's off. Like, I am not competent enough to actually finish this whole route. Like I would have no interest in like faking that I finished it. Like to me, I don't know. Like I explained this to my student, I'm a teacher for the people who don't know. And I explained this to my students. It's like, why would you want your name up on something where you lied, where instead of your name giving you pride and honor, you look up and just get reminded like, oh yeah, I'm a liar. Like that would suck to live the rest of my life looking at that. So I would rather quit and be an honest quitter than, you know, a cheating liar. So to be sure though, that no one can come back.
I mean, Jason, there's been some very high profile cases of people that, I mean, the jury's out here as to whether they did fully complete some of these really epic stuff. We've had people trying to cheat on the trans crossing of America and these big things. These are fine margins, yeah, as to
yep, no joke. So yeah, I'm gonna do everything I can to make sure I have duplicates of ways I can demonstrate that I was on every actual summit so that the people who know, like people who've actually been up there, can be like, yep, I saw his name in the register, or yep, like that is what it looks like to be on that summit. So that way, if someone tries to call foul, like those people can chime in and be like, nope, I've been on those summits. He was on those summits. Yeah. So I'm going to do everything I can to make it as easy as possible for people to tell whether I actually do this thing or if I come up short. That's the last thing I would want is to give people any chance who are just looking to be malicious. Cause that's, I mean, some people are doing it to be honest, and we need those people. Like if you're a person who knows how to look at data and look at photos and tell whether someone is actually doing something or lying about it, like, please keep doing what you're doing. If you're listening to this and do it and be public about it. Like be open. You don't have to be mean, but be open, like call things into question. Cause we need that in the community. Cause that's going to reduce the number of people who are willing to try to cheat. If they know, like they can scroll through comments and see people being called out when something is questionable. And so please keep doing that. Like we need that in the community. I'm not super skilled at it. But I still try to do that when there's a route that someone is like, hey, you do a lot of FKTs. Like I saw this, and it doesn't quite seem right. Or this person listed as unsupported, but when I was out there on the same day, here's the evidence, I was out there on the same day, I saw them running with pacers. So there's like been situations like that where like I've played a part, but I'm not a tech savvy expert. Like jump in and like be that for the community. Cause we need it. We need these things to be honest so that all of us can like be inspired instead of going, well, that might be bullshit. And I think that authenticity and that honesty and that integrity in the system that comes from all of us paying attention is what gives us the confidence to go, yeah, I can be inspired by that time because I know it was done correctly. So please do keep doing that and do it to me when I'm done with this thing. Go double check my shit.
Can you imagine that? Man, buddy, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. You, Jason, again, I know some great things about who I've been following you, especially your social media account, which is absolutely sensational. And I'll put all of this stuff in the show notes because I would really highly recommend people follow you. One of the reasons, Jason, is like, so you've got a beautiful soul. You've got a real keenness to kind of give back. You know, you love the kind of mentoring and coaching approach to life. I mean, you already mentioned earlier, Jason, which I love about your respect for the trails and nature. Have you got anything underpinning this challenge, Jason? Is there any sort of ways in which like people looking in can kind of help support you, or you know, the fantastic causes that you know you're very passionate about?
Well, since I'm going to be on the Washington trails in the state of Washington, I donated myself to the Washington Trails Association that maintains a lot of the trails I'll be running on. I'll be raising funds through my Facebook account, for them during the effort. I'm also a school teacher, and part of my passion about why I do big things is that then I can honestly and authentically turn around to my students and say, hey, I'm just some kid from some small town and I'm out living my dreams. Do you think you can do the same? Yeah. And one of the things I love to do, because one of the things that shaped my teaching, I guess I'll rewind here, early on in my career is I went to this famed rock climbing area in here in Oregon called Smith Rock, one of the places that pushed sport climbing forward in this country. I was out there and I was a beginning rock climber, but I didn't have my rock climbing gear with me, so I didn't quite look like a rock climber. But these other healthy adults, like healthy, fit looking adults, a little bit, you know, more middle aged, but still not by any means out of shape or overweight, they walk up and they apparently didn't know Smith Rock was renowned for rock climbing. And they see rock climbers, they're like, oh, wow, like, look, they're climbing on the rock. And they talk for a while, kind of impressed and in awe. But then the way they close the conversation is, oh, I could never do that. And that struck me, you know, as this young teacher, I'm like, you know, they're perfectly healthy, fit adults. I'm a healthy, fit adult. I'm choosing to do it. They're choosing. It's too scary, too hard, too difficult for them to ever do. Why is that? And one of the conclusions I came to is it's like, they just must have never been exposed to it as a normal, like acceptable thing and like learned any skills or been exposed to the skills at a young age. And so I raised money for a 12 foot high, 40 foot wide rock wall, you know, just like a little bouldering wall and some ropes and stuff. And so I teach from like third grade up. I teach my kids rappelling techniques and I teach them climbing techniques. And it's like, not because like every single one of them is going to necessarily do it, but I don't want any one of them to be the person at the Rock that goes, oh, I could never do that. Instead, I want them to go, you know what? I should take a class because I remember I really enjoyed that. Or I should hire a guide because, and, you know, get out there and do a new thing and have that adventure and have that experience instead of feeling disempowered where they can't. And so, no, a huge part of why I'm doing what I'm doing is to channel good back to my students and channel good back to the people I work with. And so I will also have a donation thing if people want to support me as a teacher and be like, hey, so this guy's doing cool stuff and then he's impacting kids' lives. So if people wanted to, it'll be through Donors Choose, a charity that specifically works with teachers and raising money for classroom items they need. So I'll have that as well. If people are like, you know, like Washington Trail sounds great, but kids, that's more what I want to support. So yeah, those are the two things I'm kind of the causes I'm trying to channel good toward. You know, I raised money for a fleet of Strider bikes, those little bikes with no pedals that kids can run along to learn to steer and balance. For now, all of my kindergarten first graders are learning to bike. I got an archery kit that I'll start integrating next year so that kids can learn archery that, you know, I think that'll go really well here because it's kind of a hunting, fishing kind of town. So teaching kids archery skills. And then I have a fleet of bikes that I use to teach road safety with my 4th through 6th graders. I've got the rock climbing wall. And then also this year I got skateboards, to let the kids learn how to do some board sports. So I like try to introduce them to these things that maybe they don't get exposure to anywhere else because they don't have an adult in their life that knows how to do it. Cause we can only teach what we learn. So it's like a lot of the problems we see in society are second order problems. It's not the kid's fault. It's like the adults in their life can't teach them that skill because they never learned it themselves. So it's like, I am an adult who's capable of doing that, who's willing to even learn new things. I taught myself to ride a unicycle this year so that I can teach kids who are interested how to ride a unicycle. And I did it publicly, like in front of my students, like took my spills. And I told them, it's like, hey, you can giggle and laugh. I give you permission. Like normally it's not nice to laugh at people who fall down, but you have my permission because I'll be laughing too. And so we laughed together as I took tons of falls on the unicycle. Like I do it like one demonstration per class per day or per week. And then eventually they saw as I was able to like ride back and forth across the entire gym and they're like, whoa, it's like, yeah, that was, you know, 4 hours of practice. Cause I logged the minutes in front of them too. And it's like, so see, this is what you can do if you're willing to put in this amount of time. And it was this cool, like demonstration of the learning process. And so I love to do that stuff. And I love to provide those things to my students. Cause I think that's what matters. Like, sure, I can teach them some team sports or we can play some tag and having fun at school, I think is super important. So it doesn't start to feel like a prison, but also I want to hand them the skills that at any point in their life, they can be like, hey, I know how to do this thing, whether it's because I enjoy it or because now I have kids and I want to teach it to my kids so they can know how to do it. So yeah, no, there's a bit of passion there for sure.
Mate, it's astonishing, buddy. I truly love it. It reminded me of, I've got some really good friends, here in London where I live, Jason, who, bunch of really great women who have formed a collective called the Get Lost Foundation. And basically what they're all about is, you know, what can we do where we've got no skills, but let's just try it. And that could be anything from kind of like quite wild roller skating to anything on the ocean. And one of the things that made me think of you, Jason, was that I remember we talked a while back, didn't we, about this concept that you call picnic, which is a completely alien concept here, is where you perhaps might combine one or two or three of these things that could be joined and be created as a sort of fastest known time. Can you just kind of explain a little bit, Jason, like what a picnic is?
Absolutely. So the term picnic is intentionally, it's misleading intentionally out of humor, because the first picnic that was dubbed a picnic was a triathlon in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where you start in Jackson on a bike and you bike out to Jenny Lake, which is beneath the Grand Teton. Yeah. You swim dead through the middle of Jenny Lake and pop out at the trailhead, the trail for Grand Teton on the other side. And then you run and rock climb your way to the top of the Grand Teton. And then you reverse it all to get all the way back to town. So you have to go back down the mountain, back through the lake, and hop back on your bike and bike back to town. So a completely human powered endeavor to go out in the mountains and to mix three disciplines, or you could argue four disciplines if you're like, well, running is a discipline and rock climbing is a discipline, so there's four. But yeah, so it's like this way to experience these big, expansive, natural spaces, these challenging spaces in a human powered sort of way, bringing a wider skill set to sort of experience them in a broader, more full way. And yeah, I got into doing a few of those myself. And one of the big ones that I'm definitely super proud of, I was just talking with a friend about this, like, you know, of the routes I've created, this might be the one that I'm like, wow, that was something special in a super special place. The Yosemite Picnic. You start at the base of El Cap, which is like an icon around the world.
Sure, yeah.
You bike from there up to Tenaya Lake, which is a lake that I came to find out as I did my research is a lake that people come as like a bucket list swim by itself. Like people who are very into swimming alpine lakes and lakes in general or bodies of water. Like it's a tick list item. Yeah. Cause it's one of the most beautiful swims you'll ever have. Cause you just have these granite monoliths coming up on every side. Like you hardly have to spot forward because you can just spot, yep, that peak's still in the right spot. That granite dome is still in the right spot. So I'm still swimming the right way. And then you get out of the water and you do this famous, what's referred to as the Tuolumne Triple Crown, because it's been around for so long, where you climb Tenaya Peak and then you do the Razor Ridge. For, you know, people who haven't heard of what a Razor Ridge is, it's like, imagine a ridge that's just like a sharp piece of rock at the top where it's just drop offs on either side. You do about a mile long climbing traverse of what's called Mathis Crest for like a mile of just Razor Ridge, just like hanging out with drop offs below you. And then you bounce off that and you climb the iconic Cathedral Peak. And then you run back down to the lake, swim back across the lake, and then bike all the way back down to El Cap. All in all, it's about 100 miles a day when you combine everything, with, I think the hardest rock climbing you do in the Yosemite decimal system is 5.7. So it's got some legitimately full on like risky rock climbing as a part of this like multi-sport day. And it's amazing. It's awesome. It was kind of cool at the end of it. Hans Florian, you know, who wrote the book on speed climbing in Yosemite and held the nose record multiple times. He saw it and he's like, oh damn, why didn't I think of that? And like to get that response out of somebody as seasoned as him was like pretty freaking awesome. It was a pretty high compliment. It's like, oh yes, I did it right. Cause I mean, anytime you add something to a place with that much history and culture, you're like super nervous. Like, what if I mess it up? What if people hate it? So yeah, no, super cool picnic. I welcome anyone to come give it a try as long as you're okay climbing in some difficult terrain and swimming after big bike rides.
Yeah. Jason, I have to tell you that I'm massively inspired by that. And one of my dreams is to create a little picnic here in the UK that you'd be proud of. So yeah, and all the fun that goes with it in terms of the research and the history and everything, yeah, it would be pretty wonderful. I know a lot of people that would love the concept, you know, of kind of combining the many disciplines. Jason, so when you finish this truly epic 100th FKT, the Washington Bulgers, I mean, you hang up your spurs, will that be it? Hundreds and retirement from the FKT world and move on to some other crazy stuff? Or is it a journey to 1,000 FKTs? what comes next, buddy?
Well, I highly doubt that I'm going to be able to sit still long enough to pick up poker. To me, the way you tell that you're aligned with the things that intrinsically motivate you in the world and with your values is that the way you celebrate the thing is by doing more of the thing. And so in my mind, probably what I'm going to want to do when I finish this 100 peaks effort is I'm going to like see some stuff out there. I'm going to be like, oh, time to go do this. Like just get in the car and drive on to the next thing. Cause I genuinely love this stuff. And I think that's one of the things that's empowering as I do it is like, I'm not doing it to get something. Like, I just genuinely, when I'm out there, I can ask myself the question, even in the low moments, like, is there a place I'd rather be? And it's pretty much the answer is no. Like, sometimes I wish I had some warm food or something on like a cold, rainy night, but it's like still this thought where it's like, man, this human experience is full and rich, and there's not many other places I could be where I'd be having the same kind of experience with these minutes of my life that I'll never have back. And so when you're in that mindset where you genuinely want to be there, it kind of changes things. So yeah, I think the way I'm going to want to celebrate is I'll probably be like, cool, let's go do another thing. Like, maybe someone will call me up with an idea and be like, hey, I'm in the area. Like, let's go hit the Wallawa Mountains, or let's go hit Hood, or let's go hit. And I'll be like, let's do it. I finished early. Let's go.
Just like when we meet in Iceland. Yeah.
We do. Yeah. Just like when we meet in Iceland. Yeah. People. International team FKT.
Dream, my friend. Bring on the dream.
I would be so stoked, man. I hope we do pull it off. I hope we pull it off.
We will, buddy. We will. We've laid the breadcrumbs, man. We're gonna do it, buddy. I'm so super proud of you, my friend. You know, it's been a real honor, all of the conversations we've had leading up to this podcast, and it's just gonna be a genuine delight to follow you, buddy. You know, I'm super excited to see, you know, the images of you on top of these, you know, epic mountains, and that's the way you've described it. I mean, I want to see it for myself because it just sounds completely Fruit Loop in the best possible way. You know what I mean, buddy? Like,
absolutely. No, it's a bit heinous. It's a bit wild. I'll try to post some really good pictures of some of the more iconic peaks of, so people can kind of be like, oh, like he's climbing a mountain. It's like, you know, you might imagine like a dome shaped hill. It's like, there are a few of them that are volcanoes where, like, sure, they're kind of dome shaped, but then there's some where it's like, wait a minute, is there even a way up that? just this craggy spire sticking out of the forest. You're like, how does a human being climb that? I'll make sure I have that sort of stuff coming up on my social media. I have a website that's almost done. It'll probably get released right as I start. That's just jasonhardrath.com. That'll have like live tracking and some information about my previous FKTs, as well as some information about this FKT for people that want to check in that way. And then, I'll have my spot tracker, through the spot website, and then people can find and follow also on the fastest known time website. My effort will be tracked in their section that says efforts we're following now or something like that. So there's quite a few ways to plug in and check in on me. If people are like, you know, when I'm sitting and sipping lemonade on a wonderful day, I want to see where this Jason Hardrath guy is suffering in the rain and the cold, you know, sleeping in a trash bag on the side of a mountain.
Do you know what's going to be really cruel, Jason? It's like when you finish this FKT, in my eyes, it will be truly iconic, and yet I'll see a newsletter from the fastestknown.com website, and they'll put somebody else as the FKT of the week.
Probably. It's probably true.
Like,
it's probably
true. By somebody. There'll be somebody doing the Appalachian Trail or something. Yep. Mickey Mouse, and they'll think that they're the big I am, you know. Nah.
They'll be like, oh, Tom Cruise did his first FKT. Dang it. Dang it, Tom. Dang it. yeah, no, it could happen for sure.
Wicked, man. You take care of yourself, yeah, Jason.
I will do my very best. You do likewise. I'm halfway wondering if I'm gonna look up at the end of this thing as I climb the last mountain, and you're gonna be on number 99 clicking off number 100 at the same time. I'm like halfway expecting it the way you're going.
It will be a dream to get to 99, buddy. But I'll wait and let you pick off the 100th. You deserve it, my friend.
Well, I'll be excited to have a 100 FKT club of more than one person pretty quickly.
Yeah. Bring it on.
Maybe we'll get t-shirts printed or something.
Nice speaking to you, Jason.
It was a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Mate, take great care, yeah?
I'll do my best, and you as well. We'll be right back.
goodness gracious me.
Doctor, I'm in trouble. Doctor, I'm in trouble. Doctor, I'm in trouble. Oh, doctor, I'm in trouble.
Well, goodness gracious me.